This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, an update on the Clifton Market, and Thane Maynard talks with photographer Tom Mangelson and writer Todd Wilkinson about their book, Grizzly, The Bears of Greater Yellowstone. But first, Andrew Tarvin is a Cincinnati native and former Procter & Gamble project manager turned comedian. He's out with a new book, The United States of Laughter, in which he chronicles a journey he took at the age of 31, speaking and performing in all 50 states. The trip lasted over a year, and it covered more than 92,000 miles and 215 events. And Drew, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So I have to ask, you work as a project manager, a computer engineer at Procter & Gamble. How do you make the transition? How did you decide to make that transition from corporate life, being an IT guy, to being someone who makes people laugh for a living?
Yeah, it was kind of a natural transition over time, which people are surprised by. Particularly, my job title is humor engineer, and they're like, "Isn't that an oxymoron? I don't understand that." But the way that it worked is, I went to Ohio State and got a degree in computer science and engineering, and then after I graduated, started working at P&G. But while I was at P&G, I started doing improv and stand up. My best friend wanted to start an improv group; he needed people, and kind of forced me to join. And I fell in love with it. And so I started to add improv and humor to my project management role, and found that I started to be more effective in it. So I proclaimed myself the corporate humorist of Procter & Gamble, which I thought someone would come down and say, "Hey, you can't just give yourself your own job title." But no one ever did. People just started referring to me as a corporate humorist. And I started to explore that intersection of humor in the workplace and improv in business, and found that there's a lot of good results for it. So then I started my own company called Humor That Works and left P&G in 2012 to do that full time, because it was basically that intersection of the engineering project management stuff that I love, but the fun and playfulness of improv and stand-up.
How big a leap was it for you to go from being at Procter & Gamble to this uncertain life of doing comedy?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny, because as a project manager, I am relatively risk adverse. And so I gave myself a list of criteria that I needed to meet before I could leave. And so it was like, oh, I need to have X number of clients and make X number of dollars, and I need to have a website with testimonials and videos and stuff. So I gave myself a reason to believe that I could leave. So by the time I actually fully left P&G, I felt pretty confident. And I realized that, you know, I assumed, what's the worst that could happen, right? In any situation, what's the worst that could happen? It's like, well, death. Death is number one. But after death, the worst that could happen is maybe I hate it, and after 6 months or a year, if I'm not successful at all, then I'll, you know, find another job in IT and go back to it.
So let's delve into this idea that you're a humor engineer. Mm-hmm. What exactly do you mean that you're a humor engineer?
Yeah, so my whole thing is that I work with organizations on how to solve problems using humor. So things like employee engagement or stress management is a really big one. There's like, I think like 83% of Americans are stressed out at work. And so it's like, how do we manage that stress? Because that impacts our productivity in the workplace. And so humor happens to be an effective way to do that. And that's what, as an engineer, I love about humor, is not just that it's fun, but that it also helps you to get results with one of the hardest things that I ever had to interact with, which was other humans.
So can you give me an example of how humor can be used to make an employee more productive, to help a company be more productive?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I kind of joke about is that it's very hard to be productive if you are dead. Or if you feel like death, right? If you're sick, you're tired, or you're like stressed out or burned out. And so you can use humor throughout the day periodically, even just like a kind of a short 5-minute break to recharge your batteries and come back. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
A humor break to come back a little bit more recharged and have a little bit more energy and be able to get back in and focus.
So humor in the workplace, it can be a dangerous thing. How do you explain to people about the line there between humor that's constructive and maybe crossing that line into humor that you just shouldn't do at work?
Right, yeah. Well, one of the easiest things is the newspaper rule, or maybe we'll say the news radio rule, which would be, would you be comfortable with whatever you're doing showing up on the front page of your hometown newspaper for your boss to read, your manager to read, your coworkers, your mom to read? And if you'd be like, I don't know if I'd want my boss to see me doing a bad impression of him, probably not appropriate for the workplace. But if you're like, oh, I'd have no problem with my boss seeing that I read emails in a different accent in my head as a way to add humor to the process, then yeah, I'm okay with that. So that's a kind of a good starting point. And understanding that, you know, the goal with humor in the workplace is to be positive, inclusive. Right? You know, think more Ellen DeGeneres than George Carlin.
Okay. Quite a difference there. Mm-hmm. Now, You live in New York now, but you have Cincinnati ties. So tell us about your ties here to
Cincinnati. So I grew up in Mason, Ohio, and went to Princeton High School. And then after I graduated, I went to Ohio State. And then when I graduated from Ohio State, I came back here and worked with P&G for a year and a half before moving with P&G to New York.
Now, you're living in New York. You're getting steady work as a humor engineer at that point, and then you decide to move out of your apartment and spend 2 years traveling to all 50 states. What in the world prompted you to do that?
Yeah, well, part of it was I was traveling a lot for work anyway. I was gone probably 50% of the nights. And I was like, what if I just extended travel a little bit more? And the 50 states is I'm an engineer, so I love checklists. And so I was like, oh, well, what's a checklist that I can do with speaking and traveling? And I've always wanted to see all of the 50 states and explore places that I'd never been to. And so I decided to strike out and see what it was like. And in a similar situation to leaving P&G of like, oh, what's the worst that could happen if I don't like being a nomad, then I can just get a new apartment in New York, or I can move somewhere else if I want to, and found out that I loved it. And so an initial kind of 2-month trial turned into a year, which I did the 50 states in a year. And then even after that, I continued to travel for 6 more months because I really enjoyed it.
Now, you brought up the point, what's the worst that can happen? That question several times. That sounds like that's a great question that people can just keep in their toolkit as far as making decisions and determining certain things. Just ask yourself the question, what's the worst that could possibly happen?
Absolutely.
Is that part of your life philosophy?
Yeah, it absolutely is. So whenever I make big decisions, I ask myself 3 questions. The first is what's the worst that could happen? The second is when I'm on my, you know, when I'm aging and maybe on my deathbed or just in retirement, what will I regret more not doing? So like, what are the things where like, oh, I wish I had done this? So for me, it's like, I wish I would have left P&G to see if I could make it on my own. And then the third question that I ask is, what makes for the better story, right? If we think of, you know, sometimes you hear that question of like, if they made a movie about your life, who would play you? And if they made a movie, would anyone care to watch it? So what makes a cooler story for you to have some fun with and, you know, maybe enjoy your life a little bit?
Now, in your book, you write about visiting some popular tourist spots, but you also write about going to little places, small towns that maybe aren't necessarily extraordinary. What compelled you to write about these places and these people?
Well, I think that part of it is it's, you know, embracing what is the United States, and what makes it so great is that it is some of the big places, but then it's also small places as well. Like my brother and I went to a town called Stewart, Iowa, which is a population of about 1,700 people. In fact, when you drive into the town, they have a big sign out there that says Stewart, Iowa, home to 1,700 good eggs and a few stinkers. And I did a show
priceless.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. And it's this feel. And it's like, that's what's cool about the country is that you have big cities like New York, which I absolutely love and live in. But then you have all these great moments kind of throughout the country that I wanted to shed a little bit of light on. And that was what prompted the book, was that I started to experience all these positive stories of the country. And we don't always see that on the news or that kind of thing. And so to say, oh, no, there is something that still unites people and there is something that is still fun. And let's talk about not just the big things, but also the small things as well.
Of all the places you visited, what surprised you the most?
I would say probably Utah, just in the sense of like, you know, never having been there. My stereotype of Utah was skiing and Mormons. Like I had no idea what to expect, and it's a gorgeous state, probably the most gorgeous state, at least in terms of the number of parks that are there between Zion and Bryce and Arches, and like just beautiful locations, incredibly friendly people. So I had no, you know, I only had the stereotypes in my head, and so it surprised me to say, oh, how much I really enjoyed my time there.
Now, the first place you visit in the book, the first state is actually Ohio. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the Reds, we've got the Indians who are in the playoffs, we've got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You wrote about having dinner with your mother at La Rosa's. So why was that important?
Yeah, it's the first story in the book, and it was incredibly important to me, one, because I love the calzones at La Rosa's. They're my favorite on the planet in terms of calzones. They're just so good, the golden triangles of deliciousness. But I wrote about it because it was very meaningful for me, because it was just a dinner conversation that I had with my mom. And my mom has always been a big inspiration for me, has always been a huge supporter of me. So when I've done these crazy decisions, she's always been cautious like a mom. Have you considered everything? But no matter what you decide, I'm going to support you. And so it was our conversation of me getting ready to be a nomad, not knowing what to expect, and us kind of having our playful humor. She's also where I get a good amount of my sense of humor from, and also my propensity to sometimes laugh more at my own jokes than other people do.
So, and you also write about visiting the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. That caused you to stop and reflect on what your late father meant to you. So what was it about the Grand Canyon that had that effect on you, Drew?
I think partially it was just that it was so beautiful. Have you ever been to the Grand
Yes,
Canyon?
Yes, I've seen it from the air, but I've never actually been there. So
yeah, so yeah. It's one of those things, like the Grand Canyon is something where, like, no matter how you describe it or even what pictures you see, I don't think you don't truly understand how beautiful it is until you go there yourself. And so I was standing at this spot on the North Rim looking out at the beauty of this Grand Canyon, and it kind of reminded me of the Mufasa moment in Lion King when Mufasa comes to Simba in the clouds and he's like saying, you know, stay true to yourself or remember yourself or something like that. And for whatever reason, it reminded me of that. Maybe it was a wind blowing. And I had this moment where I was like, you know, my dad never got a chance to see this incredible view. And so many other Americans who maybe even live close have never seen this view. And so it gave me this moment of like, why was I so fortunate to get a chance to do that? Did I deserve to get to see something like that? And did I deserve all the sacrifices that my parents, particularly my mom and my dad, made? Did I deserve it? And kind of reflecting on that and realizing that, you know, if I want to truly honor his life and what he's created, I want to make sure that I can become the best person that I can become. And so it was really a source of great inspiration and reflection.
We've talked with several former P&G folks on the show in the past who've left the company to do comedy. And you've got the P&G Alumni Network in town this week. Do you know of many others who've made that leap, that switch to comedy in your group?
Yeah, so there's like typically, at least talking with people, there's four people who have done it. So Greg Warren was the first, and he's probably one of the biggest names in terms of most national. Then there's Josh Sneed, who still lives here locally. He's a fantastic comedian. And then my good friend Rajiv Satya, who was a huge mentor for me. So when I came in, he was just leaving. And I joke with him because I've opened for him before, and I joke that, you know, I saw Rajiv leave and that he could be successful, and I thought, you know what, if Rajiv can do it, anyone can do it, right? But no, he's great. And yeah, what's funny, though, is that it creates kind of a way of looking at things that you can be successful with this. So you take the P&G approach and apply it, and instead of what they do for Tide, you apply it to your own career, and you're able to find success.
So what's the message that you want people to get from the book? What did you learn on that trip? What will you want to convey to people?
Yeah, I would say that for me, you know, despite what we see on the news, I think that there's still one thing that unites all Americans, and that is laughter. So when we can laugh with each other, when we can find connection through comedy, I think we realize we're all a little bit more alike than we are different. And that's what I would like people to kind of take away, is that, you know, just if we connect on a human level and connect first as humans as opposed to very blank or blank, this or that, that, you know, we might get along a little bit better.
Drew, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Absolutely.
It's been fun talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Andrew Tarvin, his new book is The United States of Laughter. Up next, Thane Maynard talks with photographer Tom Mangelson and writer Todd Wilkinson about their book, Grizzly, The Bears of Greater Yellowstone. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.